We knew something like this was going to happen when the Supreme Court decided the Proposition 8 in Defense of Marriage Act cases. And every judge that has looked at a marriage restriction since those decisions has struck them down.
What's with all this midnight romance being bandied about? Move on, I hear you holler. It's only sex. But whatever you do, just don't mention the other L word.
He has every right to do what he wants. That is not my issue. When parents do not have a choice as to whether or not they want their children to see this, it's wrong.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Global actions fight homophobia and transphobia. Marriage equality comes to two more U.S. states, and we'll get on the couch with Pink Floyd. All that and even more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Michael Lebeau.
And I'm Pam Marshall.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending May 24th, 2014. Millions of LGBT people and their supporters around the world participated in the 10th annual International Day Against Homophobia and Transphobia, or IDAHOT, on May 17th. U.S. President Barack Obama and Secretary of State John Kerry were among several world leaders to issue statements noting the importance of the day, and Costa Rica's new president, Luis Guillermo Solis, flew a rainbow pride flag above his official residence. Star players and leading officials in the Australian Football League used social media to express support for the day.
Hundreds of same-gender couples held a kiss-in on the eve of IDAHOT at Plaza de Armas Square in Paraguay's capital of Asunción, and thousands of Belgians rallied the following day in central Brussels.
Albanian LGBT activists marched with rainbow flags along the main boulevard of the capital city of Tirana without the threats of violence and confrontational opposition by right-wing fundamentalists that have plagued previous rights events.
Hundreds of Russian rights activists in St. Petersburg ignored threats of violence to hold a peaceful IDAHOT event on the 17th. About 200 policemen surrounded as many demonstrators, protecting them from the stones and eggs being thrown by homophobic thugs in an unsuccessful attempt to shut the event down. After short speeches from the organizers and activists, dozens of rainbow balloons were released into the sky. And even though the authorities banned a march in tribute to Eurovision Song Contest winner Conchita Wurst, many still wore fake beards to salute the drag queen singer and the unstoppable fight for equality. There were reportedly similar and relatively peaceful balloon releases, some with pink triangles attached, as part of what were billed as rainbow flash mobs in a dozen other Russian cities.
Cambodians capped off a week of pride events with an IDAHOT parade, but because the government ruled out a street march, it was restricted to Phnom Penh National Olympic Stadium. The six-day festival included workshops on family acceptance, film screenings, a Buddhist blessing ceremony, the requisite fashion show, and a concert and closing party.
Government skittishness over the upcoming 25th anniversary of the Tiananmen Square crackdown on democracy forced many IDAHOT events in China to be called off in cities including Beijing, Guangzhou, and Shenyang, while a two-day LGBT festival in Dalian did not open as planned. But Gay Star News reported low-key strolls by dozens of courageous people carrying small rainbow flags on May 17th in Changsha, Shenzhen, and Dunquan. According to the Hong Kong-based online portal Rainbow China, many participants chanted, "I am proud to be gay." There were no reports of any disruptions or arrests.
Hundreds rallied for rights in South Africa at Durban's 9th annual North Beach IDAHOT demonstration on May 17th. A few days later, the first openly gay black elected official on the continent took office. 29-year-old Zikele Mbele was sworn in as a member of the South African Parliament on May 22nd. He's a member of the Democratic Alliance, the country's main opposition party. Mbele said he'd especially like to work in the police portfolio to raise the issue of hate crimes as they relate to policing and highlight problems that still exist around homophobia, transphobia, and secondary victimization in the police service.
Elsewhere, the Canadian government has denied visitor visas to 10 Ugandan LGBT activists who were planning to attend a World Pride conference in the country next month. They were among 400 delegates from around the world invited to the three-day gathering that begins on June 25th at the University of Toronto. The government reportedly feared that the Ugandans would all seek asylum because they'd be coming from one of the most hostile anti-gay countries on the planet. But a spokesperson for the Canadian Immigration Agency refused to comment on that speculation. The Toronto Star reported that government officials informed the 10 applicants that the reasons for their visas being rejected included insufficient funds to cover the cost of their visits and the belief that they did not have a legitimate business purpose in the country. Canadian activist Andrea Houston told Pink News that these individuals from Uganda are some of the most courageous heroes. They are here to share their stories and have every intention to go home after the conference, she said, because they all have work to do in Uganda. As a result of the decision, unless things change, Frank Mugisha, who leads Sexual Minorities Uganda, will be the only activist from his country who will be able to attend the conference. He's a keynote speaker and has a multiple entry visa from previous visits.
In other news, Oregon and Pennsylvania have become the latest of the United States to have their bans on civil marriage for lesbian and gay couples declared unconstitutional. U.S. District Judge Michael McShane ruled last week that the Anti-Gay National Organization for Marriage had no legal standing to defend the 2004 Oregon law because state officials had refused to do so. McShane issued his ruling on May 19th, overturning the ban, writing that no legitimate state purpose justifies the preclusion of gay and lesbian couples from civil marriage. Reflecting on his own youthful struggles for self-acceptance, the openly gay judge hoped that, with discernment, we see not shadows lurking in closets or the stereotypes of what was once believed. Rather, we see families committed to the common purpose of love, devotion, and service to the greater community. Within hours of the ruling, the National Organization for Marriage filed a request for a stay with the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, which was promptly denied. Officials in Multnomah, Oregon's largest county, famous for trying to issue marriage licenses to same-gender couples in 2004, had announced in advance that they would begin issuing marriage licenses immediately after the expected legal green light. Moments after the ruling on May 19th, and after 31 years together, Deanna Geiger and Janine Nelson finally made honest women of each other in the lobby of the Multnomah County building, becoming the first same-gender couple to legally marry in the state.
Events moved just as swiftly this week in Pennsylvania. The day after the Oregon decision, U.S. District Judge John E. Jones III declared the Keystone State's civil marriage ban unconstitutional. Referring to Pennsylvania's 1996 ban, he wrote that we are a better people than what these laws represent, and it is time to discard them into the ash heap of history. Jones refused to put his ruling on hold pending an expected appeal by Pennsylvania's Republican governor, Tom Corbett, who was left to defend the ban in court after the state's attorney general, Democrat Kathleen Kane, refused to do so. Nevertheless, gay and lesbian couples rushed to courthouses across the state soon after the ruling to apply for marriage licenses. Pennsylvania law requires a 3-day waiting period, however, so most observers expected Corbett to quickly request an emergency stay to prevent any actual weddings. But the governor instead announced that he wouldn't be filing an appeal. The devout Roman Catholic made clear in a May 22nd statement that his decision is a politically pragmatic one and that he personally remains opposed to marriage equality. But he said that he and his legal team concluded that the case is extremely unlikely to succeed on appeal. Philadelphia City Hall was among the first venues to host the weddings of same-gender couples on May 23rd. 8 city judges performed the simultaneous weddings of 8 couples in the mayor's gilded reception room as family and friends gathered round. 19 U.S. states and the District of Columbia have now opened civil marriage to same-gender couples.
Gay and lesbian couples in Utah got mixed signals from the bench this week. A federal judge ordered the state to recognize the unions of more than 1,300 same-gender couples who legally married during the brief period they could. The state is likely to appeal, however, keeping those couples in legal limbo. Republican Attorney General Sean Reyes successfully convinced the Utah Supreme Court earlier in the week to also stop those legally wed same-gender couples from adopting children, including each other's, while the question of marriage equality in the state is under judicial review.
The Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals granted motions by Idaho's governor and attorney general to stay Chief U.S. Magistrate Judge Candy Dale's May 13th ruling overturning that state's civil marriage ban until the appeal process is concluded. The court did order an expedited review of the ruling and said it will hear the case the week of September 8th.
Meanwhile, Wisconsin's attorney general took the unusual step this week of asking U.S. District Judge Barbara Crabb, who's hearing a challenge to his state's ban, to issue a stay of her ruling before she's even issued it. J.B. Van Hollen, a Republican, said during a TV interview that he intended to aggressively defend Wisconsin's constitutional ban on civil marriage for same-gender couples, but expected to lose in district court based on recent marriage equality rulings by other federal courts across the country.
And finally, same-gender couples filed lawsuits last week and this week challenging the state bans in Alaska, Montana, and South Dakota, leaving North Dakota as the only state in the union without a legal challenge to its civil marriage ban for now.
That's News Wrap for the week ending May 24th, 2014. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written by Greg Gordon, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and produced by Steve Pride.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. I'm Pam Marshall.
And I'm Michael LeBeau.
Psychology turns pink and Anderson Cooper sees red later in the program. State-level marriage equality rulings around the U.S. are coming so fast that one of our gay journalist colleagues is complaining that he's afraid to leave home in case something else happens. MSNBC's Rachel Maddow made this week's first big announcement on May 19th.
Today in Oregon, a federal judge issued a pro-gay marriage ruling for Oregon that was the 12th consecutive such ruling from a federal judge since the big U.S. Supreme Court case last year that apparently paved the way for equal marriage rights from sea to shining sea. In his dissent from that Supreme Court ruling last year, Antonin Scalia predicted that this would happen, that gay couples would soon get the right to marry everywhere. He did not mean it in a good way when he said it. But in case after case after case after case after case, he has been right. Red state, blue state, Piggly Wiggly supermarket or skyscraper skyline, it is happening everywhere across the country. 12 consecutive states now with Oregon today. So much so and so many times now that we are almost getting used to it. That day happened today in Oregon, and couples started getting married today, right away, just as soon as they could. It almost doesn't even feel like news anymore, but it really, really is.
Well, the suspense may be wearing thin for MSNBC's Rachel Maddow, but her colleague Chris Matthews was far more enthusiastic about the news that broke the following day.
Today, a federal district judge, when recommended by former Pennsylvania Senator Rick Santorum, of all people, and appointed by President George W. Bush, ruled that the state's ban on same-sex marriage is unconstitutional. Judge John Jones, the third, ruled that, quote, the issue we resolve today is a divisive one. Some of our citizens are made deeply uncomfortable by the notion of same-sex marriage. However, that same-sex marriage causes discomfort in some does not make its prohibition constitutional. Wow. And this is the fourth ruling striking down a ban on gay marriage in a span of just 3 weeks now, following decisions like this in Arkansas, Idaho, and Oregon. As of today, 44% of this country's population, 44% lives in a state that allows or recognizes gay and lesbian couples to marry. Pete Williams is an NBC News justice correspondent. In fact, he is the justice correspondent for this network. Pete, how far does this take us toward marriage equality nationwide?
Well, now we have marriage on the entire northeastern United States. We have it on the entire West Coast with the ruling in Oregon the other day. The real question is, how soon is one of these cases going to get to the U.S. Supreme Court? And will the Supreme Court take the case? They don't necessarily have to, remember. So far, we don't have the main reason the court would take a case, which is a split among the federal circuits. Now, we haven't gotten to the appeals court stage. Some of these cases have been argued, but there are no appeals court decisions yet. So maybe next year in the Supreme Court, maybe the year after at the earliest.
Brian Sims is the first openly gay person elected to the Pennsylvania legislature from Center City, Philadelphia. And Ted Boutros is a partner with the law firm of Gibson, Dunn and Crutcher. Let me go to Ted Boutros, because you guys are famous with your partner there fighting for this now.
Ted Olson.
So along with David Boies, how's it look for the overall fight that Pete was just mentioning to basically bring about marriage equality once and for all under the Constitution?
It looks fantastic, Chris. If you look at it, it's like a tsunami that is going from sea to shining sea in the United States with all those states you just had up on the screen, the South, the East, the West. We knew something like this was going to happen when the Supreme Court decided the Proposition 8 in Defense of Marriage Act cases back in June of 2013, and I couldn't have predicted that it would be this uniform. Every judge that has looked at a marriage restriction since those decisions has struck them down. It's really incredible.
Okay.
It's moving at a really fast pace. And
Ted,
I think
this judge today ruled the way that your partners and you have wanted to rule, which is an unconstitutional ban on same-sex marriage. Now, how much chance does that ruling today in Pennsylvania have of going up through the appellate process to the Supreme Court? That case.
A very strong chance. This is about the whole Constitution. Yes, I think it has a very strong chance because of the case in Virginia. The Fourth Circuit is considering a case from Virginia where the court struck these laws down. You've got cases from around the country that are striking it down. So I think you're going to see these issues get to the Supreme Court next year, possibly the following year, but very quickly. The court decided on very broad issues about liberty, equality, human dignity. Those issues are going to get to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court's going to agree with what that district court found today.
Is the Supreme Court still known as Anthony Kennedy's court? One guy decides these things?
Well, he's definitely been in this area and in the rights of gay and lesbians has been the leader on the court.
I agree.
The language he used in the decision last June leads right to the result that the judge reached today.
Representative Sims, your feelings about the success of the cause you believe in?
Well, I think I join millions of Pennsylvanians today in my excitement. There is, as you can see, Philadelphia behind me. There's a lot of people right now that are very proud of the Commonwealth for the first time in a while. We're a state that really lacks even the most basic civil rights for LGBT people. But this was a huge step forward for us.
MSNBC's Chris Matthews spoke with NBC News Justice Correspondent Pete Williams, attorney Ted Boutros, and Pennsylvania State Representative Brian Sims. With ongoing court challenges to bans in several other states, marriage equality in the U.S. will still be news for some time to come.
I'm a little tired of the weary throwaway line that there is no such thing as the gay sensibility. Of course there is such a thing as the gay sensibility. Of course gay men and women think in some fundamental ways differently from straights. It is not just about what we do in bed. It is about the echoes in the culture of who we are or who we aren't. Hi, I'm Clive Barker. Listen to This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian news magazine.
Still to come, when is a kiss not just a kiss? When it makes the ridiculous. But up next, commentator Charlie Bauer, Ph.D., talks about G-men, the L-word, making it in a heterocentric world, and what he calls Pink Floyd.
Us. And them. And after all, we're only ordinary men.
I'm a keen fan of all the new gay identifications within the media. We're swamped in movies and series about gay men all of a sudden. Okay, they tend to be about the usual, the expectation, the disappointment, the hurt and the baggage involved in a relationship. Yes, they're all about gay men shagging like rabbits and taking drugs. What they continually raise for me is the freaky reasoning within the emotional connections we forge as we head through our lives as queer people. I can almost hear the screams, "What's with all this goddamn romance being bandied about? Move on!" I hear you holler. "It's only sex!" Whatever you do, just don't mention the other L word, love. To get to the bottom of this, I have to reemphasize how growing up emotionally as a homo within a straight world has been an impossible task. It stems from some kind of fear that occurs within us when that big difference, i.e. discovering ourselves to be other, sinks in when we're still children. It's as if, from this point on, that self-imposed closet results in us remaining infantile in our emotional measuring. And when we tether that big difference onto the usual whammy of childhood abandonment regarding the love and acceptance of our parents, all queer hell breaks loose. I know, it's Pink Floyd, but there we go. It's also been suggested that we somehow emotionally freeze at this point in our childhood, a point where, in our unformed kiddie brains, we no longer feel free to love unconditionally. As a result, we continue onwards through life, understanding less and finding it all unfulfilling as we attempt to live within the constant plod of the heterosexual world. You still keeping up? Good. Nowadays, gays can marry, get pensions and the rest, but that's only really a fiscal conformity. It's still only a compromise and certainly not the end result of any struggle for the freedom to love. Why? Because homosexuals are still not allowed to love in a heterosexual world, the world which is still naturally peopled by the people who bring forth the smaller gay and straight people. Apparently, without love, there may be no people. Then, maybe the saddest thing is that we may never truly be able to experience love in the same way as we did before our big difference kicked in. Maybe it's all about us homos mourning that parental love forever by realizing our inability to have replacement children ourselves. Maybe it is about heterosexual conformity after all. Perhaps even being a gay parent is not the normalizing measure it was once rumored to be. But it's the standards that we gayers tally ourselves to within all this emotional hand-rearing that is particularly harsh. All those emotional rules invented by ourselves when we were unformed, self-regulating children have a tendency to stay in place forever. These are the unfortunate byproducts of the absence of any nurturing or early role models for our type of emotional needs, brought about because gay emotional needs are still taboo and largely invisible within a heterosexual society. Therefore, any emotional codes we try to take with us into adulthood are set to fail and burn like embers throughout the course of our own lifetime. Enough already? Okay, last part. When we get to the teenage baby-making age, we more often than not forget about the whole thing by learning to drink, take drugs, or to socially reinvent ourselves away from the aloneness we have come to recognize as being gay. Unnaturally, and I mean unlike heterosexuals, our potential relationships and friendships are not forged using the same codes as the world at large, i.e. sex partners as potential baby makers or friends as support networks for us as parents. Only then do some of us move on to some form of queer culture, to those places where we can kiss each other in public. The other side of this strange old coin is that everything we witness from the moment of our births, every exchange and dream we've ever been sold, emanates from the firm and permanent structure of a heterosexual society. So, what is seen to have become normal gay behavior, like the flat screen TV and the Prius, is based instead on that heterosexual model which, as I've just mentioned, is defined as shagging, having children, and raising them to have their own. Don't forget this model isn't flawed. Heterosexuality works. And it's been proven. Just look in the mirror. Sure, we homos can have IVF and hit the turkey basters as many times as we desire. We too could breed legions of sexual indeterminates. But understand this. We will never stand close to the heterosexual paradigm unless we are first allowed to love without restriction. I'm Charlie Bauer.
When the TV personality who piously protested pro football's first televised gay kiss turned out to have previously hosted a posse of Chippendale strippers, CNN's Anderson Cooper had only one place to put her.
Time now for The Ridiculous, and if you're not in the Dallas area, you are missing out on a spectacular morning show called The Broadcast, and an incredible moment last week when they veered away from springtime pizza recipes and how to slim down your fat pets to weigh in on this. Michael Sam kissing his boyfriend while ESPN cameras were rolling after Sam became the first openly gay player to be drafted by the NFL. Now, to say that this bitterly divided the all-important demographic of Ladies of Dallas knockoffs of The View is an understatement.
And that's a moment of celebration for something very exciting that happened to him because he worked his butt off, and now we're beating him up
Amy, why are you making a face?
I don't call it a moment of celebration.
But we're not attacking people that are having sex out of wedlock or cheating on their wives. Hold on.
Why aren't you calling that a moment of celebration? You didn't feel like that was a moment of celebration?
No, because here's the thing. It's being pushed in faces.
Had he been kissing his wife, would it have bothered
you? I would have said, get a room. I don't want to see that. Here's the thing. ESPN would not have aired any of it had he been kissing his wife. Can we agree that this was an opportunity to make news?
No, I think we can agree that we're making a mountain out of a molehill.
Amy Kushner got so flustered she ended up storming off the set, but not before she got in a couple more salient, totally not homophobic points.
He has every right to do what he wants. That is not my issue. I just don't want it in my face. When parents do not have a choice as to whether or not they want their children to see this, it's wrong.
Now, Amy Kushner apparently has been taking some criticism online, but look, she has every right to express her opinion. She just wants us to think of the children, and she has a point. If we don't take action, TV could become a bacchanalian free-for-all, replete with half-naked men and indiscriminate kissing. It's okay, she was kissing strippers, and she didn't even really know them. It's not like two guys who actually, you know, were in love or anything. That's offensive. Look, I get a lot of people in the country agree with Amy Kushner, no doubt, and that's certainly their prerogative, and it's going to take time. There was a recent HuffPo YouGov poll that found nearly half of those surveyed thought it was inappropriate for networks to show the Michael Sam kiss, and people are allowed to have their opinions. But to Amy Kushner's argument that nobody shows football players kissing their wives or their girlfriends, well, that's simply not true. And I don't think she's being exactly honest when she says she wouldn't want to see that either, or she yells, get a room, whenever she sees that. If you're uncomfortable seeing some kind of affection and not another, why not just say that and leave the disingenuous excuses about why you're uncomfortable where they belong on The Ridiculous?
That was CNN's Anderson Cooper. And as political humorist Bill Maher wishfully noted on his real-time HBO TV show this week.
Folks, we had a televised, celebrated, interracial gay kiss during the NFL draft. The culture war is over and we won.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine. This week, Michael LeBeau, Pam Marshall, and Charlie Bauer, PhD, contributed program material. Thanks also to Steve Pride. Percy Faith, Pink Floyd, and Kenny G performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is made possible by a grant from the Ivana Foundation, a bequest from the estate of Christopher David Trentum, and the generosity of our listeners. Visit us at thiswayout.org for news about the show, the crew, the podcasts, and links to our blog, Facebook, and Google Plus pages. Follow TWO Radio on Twitter, email TWORadio@AOL.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on 8CCC Alice Springs Northern Territory, Trans-FM Broward County, Florida, KBRP Bisbee, Arizona, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. We're going to all stay tuned.